Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 183, non-spooky edition. Unfortunately, Glacinator's not here tonight. He had a last-minute test that his college professor decided to spring on him, which I hate. So I'm really feeling for him, so he couldn't be here. Thankfully, I was able to pull John away from Wii Online Bowling. That's right. You heard that correctly. Yes, Wii Sports Online Bowling. He was in a furious match, what little bit of it I heard, which he will tell you about a little bit later. But John is here tonight, obviously, since we're doing a show.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, Wii Sports Bowling. And a little bit of tennis, but we'll get to that in a second.
All right, so I think the first thing I will say is the Twitter rap battle's gotten out of hand. I don't know who was drunk and who wasn't. I think John might have been because he spilled half a beer into his keyboard. I'd really like to make fun of him about that, but I wrecked a Logitech keyboard doing that one time, so I can't technically make fun of him. Roger was really going at it, and he's getting pretty gangster on us, you know, coming out straight out of St. John, Jill. My favorite of this Twitter rap battle that somehow my name's in, but I'm not really involved in. Did I even respond to you guys at all?
I think you just stayed the observer.
Well, I didn't. I thought I responded once, and I can't tell with the app I use. Anyways, according to Mr. Roger, yeah, it was a pretty good episode. You guys got lucky. Got lucky. Come on, man. We're from the mean streets of Podcastville, where we started with like two tin cans and a string and a half blown out subwoofer. Luck ain't got nothing to do with it, son.
It's all skills.
We be elite podcast professionals, don't you know? Do you like that? I didn't do that. I didn't do that one on purpose at first. Run in the Canadian, don't you know? Oh God!
Don't you know?
That like was total just right out. There was no thought involved. That's awesome. Anyway,
gangster.
Anyway, hopefully we can impress his Rogerness this week, even though he hasn't signed up for the forums yet. He's lazier than I am. There's part of me that's got to appreciate that, because if you can out-lazy me, you're doing something. Okay, so obviously I've given a little bit away about what John's been playing this week, but and we're going to do this a little different, sort of, because it's just John and I here. But why don't you tell the folks everything you've been playing this week?
All right, well, starting off, I will touch briefly on Costume Quest, which continues to be the family favorite of the moment. Wanda is now has gotten into that game. She's on the final boss right now. She tried to beat him last night, but couldn't do it, and then she had to go to bed. But yeah, the grand total so far on Costume Quest hours played on this game that we finished in 4 hours. Is now at a whopping 33 hours between everybody in the house. It's a little bit crazy. And so, because it's kind of, you know, still the hot game, me and Peter, we were playing with some Play-Doh the other day, and we ended up making figures, you know, Play-Doh figures of characters from the game. So we made this Play-Doh. First, we made the Play-Doh robot, but then Peter destroyed it, the robot's costume. So then we made the Statue of Liberty. And then we made the French fry costume for those of you who know. And then they were across the table from the grubbin that we made out of the green Play-Doh. So it looked okay, pretty funny. I don't know. I think I mentioned it on the show that I got a favorited tweet from Tim Schafer that I made a comment about Costume Quest. And this time I put it up on Twitter, a tweet pic of Peter and his. Play-Doh figurines, and sent it off to him, and he replied. It was pretty cool. He said that was a great job, and then he tagged I can't remember her name, but she was the lead art designer on the game and is now one of the lead art designers at Pixar, and saying that she would appreciate it too, and she wrote me back too. So that was that felt pretty good, and I was trying to tell Peter how cool it was. Of course, he's 3 and a half, so he doesn't quite get how cool it is that the creator of a game that you're playing one of your favorite games has talked to you, but I told him, like, this is the people, these are the people who made the game, and they liked your Play-Doh, and he was, oh, okay, play more game. So he didn't really care too much, but
well, and it's interesting because as much as I've called Schaefer a little crazy at times, and I think I've probably taken shots at him once or twice for silly stuff he said, nowhere near the level of the neighbor Dactids or Jaffe or Cliffy. I've followed him on Twitter for quite a long time, and he's always talking to his audience. I mean, yeah. It's super cool, and I'm envious of you that you know that he took the time, and especially with the Play-Doh stuff, because I saw that. You know, I was actually paying attention to Twitter that day. Well, I follow so many people that you know I can rack up 1,000 tweets and nothing flat.
Yeah, same here.
But so sometimes you miss stuff, but. For the most part, though, I was watching that, and that is one thing I will always have a lot of respect for Schaefer. And truthfully, a little bit behind the curtain information, it'd probably make me go easier on him in some cases, or give him more of the benefit of the doubt than I would say, you know, one of the name redacteds or Knucklehead that made Braid or you know anybody else that I usually just have no problem with tarring and feathering instantly. Yeah. But, I mean, because Schaefer, he tends to wander into those areas sometimes, but he's usually pretty, he's not as acidic as Jaffe.
No.
He's willing to discuss it like David Scott Jaffe is, but he's usually more mellow. He kind of reminds, actually, I'm not sure I should say this because it'll end your friendship with him, or your budding friendship. He kind of reminds me of, like, Kevin Smith's character from Clerks.
Oh, the Silent Bob?
Yeah, kind of that. Not so much stoner guy, just really laid back.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of mellow dude. Maybe it's chemically enhanced, maybe not.
Who knows?
You know, but...
Yeah. But I thought it was cool for him to acknowledge it and take the second to send me a quick response. So, you know.
Yeah, it also does all kind of always kind of suck when kids are too young to understand that you know that this is actually a pretty decent move on his part.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, but bottom line is between the three of you, you've put 11 hours each into that game.
Yeah, exactly right.
And I think I've played it maybe three. So, I mean, that not only are you getting your money's worth, but you're spending quality family time together with a damn video game.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Oops, video games are bad, people. What are you going to do now? You got a husband and a wife and a child enjoying quality time together with a video game. Where does that fit into your little ideology?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, other than that, I've also been touching... that could lead somewhere bad. I've been touching Guacamelee a little bit here and there. I'm still trying to get my way to 100% on all items collected and all you know all treasure chests found, all skills and all that stuff found. And as of last night, I've kind of hit there. I got everything bought in the store, and I also defeated this area called the Caverna del Palo, which is sort of a streak of kill rooms, for lack of a better word, where at the end of each set of, I think it's 10 in a row of increasing difficulty, you get a treasure chest at the end, which gives you extra piece of your heart, like Zelda style, or a piece of your stamina added to it as well. So I went through all three of those. I honestly have been kind of avoiding those because the thing about Guacamelee, I've probably more enjoyed the exploration and the Metroid-ness of it rather than the combat. The combat's good, but I didn't feel like I was really good at the combat. But once I got into this thing and I started realizing, yeah, maybe I do have the hang of this. I'm not getting 300 hit combos or anything crazy, but at least I'm getting through the enemies at a pretty decent rate. And so I got through that part and. So I have the gold medal, which means 100% on all the areas in the game, except for the last one, which I haven't started yet, because I think it's the kind of thing where, like, I get this warning from the goat man telling me that you know before you move on, make sure you're ready. So I guess that means that I'm not going to be able to go back once I go into the final level. So So I'm ready to go. So maybe by next podcast, I'll have that game finished. The other games that I finished, or I've been playing, I should say, have been on Wii U. I'll get to Sports Club in a second, but I've been playing a bit of a new game that I bought. I was at EB Games and I saw it used, which is unusual for me to buy a used game, but I haven't. Nintendo actually have a pretty big penchant for not dropping the prices on their new games. Even though this is a third party game, I bought Need for Speed Most Wanted U for less than half price used. And I didn't mention it last week because I had it during last week's show, but I hadn't even opened the box yet. So Wanda was playing Costume Quest, so I popped this thing into the Wii U and started playing it for real. I had gone for a test drive beforehand, but didn't really get too far into it. So this game is the Wii U version of Need for Speed Most Wanted. Comes with an extra DLC, what would have been a DLC pack patched in, but it has the extra functionality with the gamepad, things like you can manually change, you can change the world from night to day, and you can change the type of car. You can do a lot, you can have the map on the screen. A lot of options that you can select down there. To make, rather than having to go into a menu and stuff. But the game, I will say, it is super pretty. And from everything I've read online, because the Wii U is technically more powerful than the 360 and the PS3, it's of all the versions of the game on consoles, it is the best looking. And boy, it is really spectacular, actually. The lighting and stuff is phenomenal. Like the really, things like very subtle things, like when it starts to rain and you can see the wet pavement and you can see the droplets, hitting the asphalt and stuff. The game is moving really fast and really smoothly. Though I did find out a small bit of chugging on the frame rate if there's something going on in the background. I was downloading a pic the other day. I was downloading the Pikmin DLC update for Wanda while I was playing it initially, and I did find that it chugged a bit. But then again, once that stopped, it was a smooth sailing. I never had one issue. I didn't have any issues last night while I was playing it, while wanting to play Costume Quest. So Need for Speed, I've never played one of these games before, and I'm not a big racing game fan. Oh, I said I'm not a fan. I just haven't gotten into it very much, and so I'm not a Gran Turismo guy. But this thing is a little more lighthearted, where there's a lot of high speed racing, a lot of crashes, and the added element, because it's a most wanted game. There's kind of like cop chases a lot. If you're caught speeding by a cop car or a speed camera and a cop car is nearby, you'll start getting chased. It doesn't happen mid race. No, that's not true. It had happened to me once mid race, but I think that was part of the idea of that particular race. But the cops are chasing you, and you have to evade them while driving skillfully. They'll come up and they'll try to knock you off the road. They'll drive up, and you can hear the police radio through the Wii pad. You can hear the cops talking back and forth for descriptions of your car and where you're going, what direction and stuff, and how they're doing in the chase. Like, there's a roadblock. They'll talk about there being a roadblock up ahead. Three blocks ahead. On the eastbound, whatever, whatever, and yeah, so you can anticipate where stuff's going to be, and you get points for busting through roadblocks or taking out cars, like if you knock them out the side of the road, make them crash and stuff. So you get this most wanted score by doing different things, and that includes winning races, evading cops, jumping off ramps and busting through billboards and stuff. There's a lot of little things that go on. They build up your score, and once your score is built up enough, you can then challenge one of the 10 most wanted drivers in the city. And the city is this, like this to back up. The city is kind of like this big open world town with lots of different terrains and areas that you can drive around. Like the farthest distance I drove. Now, I have the distances and stuff and speeds in metric. So, the furthest distance I had to drive to reach a race, I think, was 7 kilometers. And I assume that's pretty well right across the length of the whole town. So, it's pretty big. I'm not sure what the actual would what the actual size of the entire area is. I didn't read that anywhere yet, but it's pretty expansive. And yeah, I have to say I really do enjoy it. The music is pretty good that plays in the background. Lots of different tracks. I think there's some Muse on there. I think there's some Green Day and stuff. It's not so much top 10 hits or anything, but it's pretty good stuff. I'm looking forward to playing it some more. It's gotten great reviews. I know that across the board, but unfortunately, it didn't sell very well on Wii U. I know that the one coming up, Need for Speed, I think it's called Rivals, is coming out this fall, and it's not getting a Wii U version, which is too bad. But then again, if it's not going to sell, it's money that they can push into the next gens, I guess. I'll go ahead.
Just first off, let me apologize. I didn't realize I was unmuted. I must have hit it with my mouse, so any bumping, banging, my apologies. Second, that's about 4.5 miles.
4.5 miles
from kilometers. And the other thing is, if I was gonna pick one franchise to get into for like racing series, Gran Turismo would be dead last because that's like a really heavy duty, serious simulator.
Yeah.
And then Forza is kind of a little bit less, but still really pretty much hardcore racing. But Need for Speed, whether it's the most wanted, they do several different types and have for. Over the, I mean that thing, that the franchise started on PC.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one from, it's PC, so probably like late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically, the cop car chases do happen quite a bit.
Yeah,
in the middle, you just haven't run into more of them yet. It depends on what style you're doing. I think the one you have on Wii U, and was also on 360 and PS3. I've got the tablet version.
Mm-hmm.
That I picked up when I first got my tablet to see how the gyroscopics did. But that's a really fun one to get into. I mean, crash, you're going to... But if I was going to pick a racing series for somebody to dip their toes in, that'd definitely be it.
Yeah, and from what I understand, this game is a bit similar in feel to Burnout, the latest Burnout that came out, which I haven't played either, but... Again, this is from what I've read.
Yeah, in the racing genre, you get the fanboys saying that, Burnout's a clone of Need for Speed, and Need for Speed's just copying Burnout, this, that, and the other thing. And, of course, they're borrowing from each other. Need for Speed, I know for a fact, was first,
mm-hmm.
but so what?
Yeah.
They do similar things.
Mm-hmm.
But... Well, it's like Burnout Crash, that XBLA game I was having a riot with.
Yeah, yeah.
It had a lot of characteristics of Need for Speed and miniature kind of deal. I wish they'd put that on tablets. That'd be kind of a riot on a tablet, but
it would actually. Yeah, but the Need for Speed Most Wanted, it is really really pretty. It runs really really fast as well. I like all the different cars. And how they handle differently, each one does. Some are really super fast, and some are pretty modest. And every time you win a race, you unlock an upgrade, whether that's better traction off road or extra nitrous. Everything has nitrous. Even the most basic car has nitrous, which is kind of funny. But it's. I think it's all meant in good fun anyway. So yeah, I'll definitely play more of that, and it looks great on the gamepad. Like there was no lag between the signal. Like I was playing an off TV mode, right, and there was no issues at all with the controls or the responsiveness. So yeah, it's a winner. So finally, Wii Sports Club, which just came out today, and I wanted to play a couple rounds of tennis and bowling, which are the two sports that they debuted today before the show, so I could talk about it a bit. And so Wii Sports Club is a takeoff, of course, the original Wii Sports, but they've added the Wii Motion Plus controls to it. And we'll discuss their pricing schemes and stuff a little bit later, but for right now, you can get into Wii Sports Club and you can start it up and get a 24-hour free trial of both games, play all you want for 24 hours, and then there's gets into some of the pricing stuff. But the games themselves, they're just exactly what you get on Wii Sports. They offer online multiplayer, this time, which surprisingly got me interested in what I was doing rather than just playing a regular game against the computer. So because you do see what the other people are doing, like their movements and stuff. There's not like there's any staggering. Like the online experience from what I did just for the brief experience I had was seamless. Like I got players right away. Like I didn't pick my friends. I didn't pick my particular club, but I picked anyone can join in, and it was pretty well instantaneous. They give you something to do while you're waiting. You can play when you're waiting in the lobby, so to speak, for someone to join you. You can hit tennis balls into these targets, and then if you're playing bowling, you can throw a few frames while you're waiting as well. So it's not too bad. The club aspect, you kind of pick where you want to be, what club you want to join, whether that's your local province or state. I flicked through till I found Newfoundland and Labrador, and joined that one. You can change clubs once a day, and I guess what that does, it kind of gives you access to that club's particular leaderboard, and you can compete with your friends or people in your club, I guess. And but you can also make the club as big as you want. You can join like the continental club or the worldwide club, and play that way. So, without having gone into it too deeply to see what all the options are, it's appealing in that it kind of I think eventually it could scratch that Geometry Wars itch, the leaderboards, trying to beat your friend's scores and get the best frame bowling and stuff. And if you really have a decent group of friends to keep track of this stuff with, it could get pretty fun actually, because you do get to when you're playing on on the floor on the I won't call it couch co-op, I guess, for bowling, but when you're playing with friends, you get to be competitive with them. And if you're just playing single player, it's not quite the same experience. But online multiplayer, well, that's different. It's pretty fun. I wish it did. I wish it had voice chat, or at least I think I wish it had voice chat. But what it has is this: you can program a phrase to your D-pad on your Wii remote, so you can say, good job, or not, nice, I did it. You can select whatever you want. I did notice that you can pick phrases and stuff from the Miiverse, so I'm not sure exactly what that means. You can write up your own message, customized message, rather than the prepackaged ones. You can choose other things, so that could be interesting. And then the whole time you're playing, you also have these Miiverse messages flipping up on your gamepad, so that you can read them while you're waiting your turn or flip through different things. And while you're waiting for your turn, it keeps you occupied, especially in the bowling one, because when I jumped in, it was a four person multiplayer. It was somebody in Mexico, somebody in, what would I say it was, South Carolina? Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Yes, South Carolina. I can't remember where the other person was, but like I said, the multiplayer was seamless. Like, this is Nintendo now, remember? I know everyone's used to Xbox Live always, I don't know if it's always seamless, but usually being pretty good. Nintendo Online has often been pretty crappy, but I'll have to say, in the few games that I played, it was spot on. So, if that's a sign of good online from Nintendo to come, then good for them. And that's what I've been playing for the last 30 minutes that we've been talking.
As for me, still playing more Minecraft. The Feed the Beast mod it's really stair-stepped well. You start with one thing and you just keep going. This week it was making automatic farms and then taking that produce, and instead of feeding hungry villagers, I'm grinding it up into fuel. We're doing very similar to reality. Not sure I agree with either, truthfully, but it just builds, and you just keep building and building and building. We had a new person join this week, and the nice thing about that is the rest of us have gotten to a point where you can kind of give them a quick guide on what's going to be the easiest to get out of the vanilla stuff and into the mod stuff. And now that we've all played it, a bunch, we kind of have an idea. And of course, there's differing opinions. You have three or four different human beings. You're going to have differing opinions on how to do things, on what you should do first. But for a new person joining, it's not quite as much scramble around as it was for us. And that's kind of cool that you can now pass the information on. I don't think we're going to have a ton more people joining, but at the same time, it's kind of nice. So there's that. But I did play three new games this week. The first one that I'll get out of the way really quickly is EverQuest 2. Now, I may have talked about this in a prior show. It went free to play on Steam. The thing is, the Sony Online Entertainment, much like some MMO publishers, decided to be idiots and lock some of the classes. That feature, or that bait of trying to get you to buy a subscription or buy a character class out of their store doesn't wash with me. I mean, I'm used to microtransactions in MMOs. That's where they came from. It's nothing I have a problem with, because if I can play the game for free with a few limitations that I can then decide to purchase, such as extra bags for my character or dungeons as I get higher levels or extra character slots or extra bank slots, that kind of stuff I'm all okay with. When you lock character classes, that's just ridiculous. Now, on Google Plus here a couple days ago, somebody had mentioned that they had stopped doing that. Somebody maybe finally slapped them in the head and told them this is not a good idea. So I rolled an assassin character and ran around in the game briefly last night for an hour and a half. The only funny thing, and this applies whether you play shooters or fighting games or racing games or any kind of game, I was leaving the starter area and moving to a still new player kind of area, but not just fresh off the character creation screen. And I had a guy send me an invite to a guild. Not that surprising. A lot of higher level players hang around the starter areas to do that in a lot of MMOs. But when I declined this guy's guild invite, he started sending me private messages, which are known as tells, telling me that essentially I would not do very well in this game if I did not join a guild, particularly his, obviously. It doesn't probably help or hurt, depending on how you want to look at it, that I was playing as a female character, as I often do, and I've stated my reasons 1,000 times in the past. If I'm going to stare at an ass for 2-3 hours, I'd rather stare at a female's. Sorry. Sexist? Yes. Ridiculous? Yes. Still doing it? Yep. Anyway, so he sent me this. He kept sending me these tells that, you know, you're just not going to get very far in the game if you don't join a guild. And they've got all kinds of veteran players and all just stuff I'd heard 1,000 times. But I'd never heard this one. He says, all our veteran players, all our high-level players that will be helping you have been hardcore MMO players since World of Warcraft. And I immediately felt two things: pity for this guy and old, because your first MMO was WoW. It's kind of like people that have told me in when I was still playing Battlefield 3 that they're really elite because they've been playing since the original COD Modern Warfare. Fuck. It's like, oh God. So at least I was able to bring maybe a slight bit of humor to the MMO discussion, which I know is, you know, not super popular here. But that kind of struck me as funny that, yeah, if World of Warcraft was your first MMO, you ain't veteran and you ain't hardcore. Sorry. Well, yeah, maybe you're hardcore. Maybe you've maybe that, but you're definitely not veteran. MMOs go a little further back than that, kids. The second game that I played this week, and one I've been looking forward to playing for a long time, and for a bit thought I'd played some a little before and realized very quickly that I hadn't, is Jade Empire. Now, Jade Empire is a BioWare Grey Matter single-player RPG. It was initially released in 2005 on the Xbox. Thus why I had not played it. I had heard from various people over the years from 2005 to recently that it's an excellent RPG. Some people will tell you it's one of their favorites from BioWare. It's not my personal, not going to be my personal favorite from a BioWare connected RPG, but it is really good. And I have to say that while I'm thinking the GOG version, Good Old Games version, might be a little enhanced or cleaned up for modern day, I don't think it's been enhanced that much, and for an 8-year-old game, it still looks amazing. The game's a lot of fun. You're set in, basically, let's call it, for lack of a better term, ancient China. So it's a lot of martial arts styles. It's not really that heavy duty on inventory, meaning you don't really get armor. You get a couple weapons, but you get a lot of different martial arts fighting styles, which I thought at first might throw me off a little bit, but in actuality, I'm really enjoying once I got used to the combat. The story's excellent. I'm really enjoying it, and it pretty much completes me having played almost, well, let me put it like this. It completes me having played every BioWare RPG worth playing. So that leaves out Dragon Age 2, a lot of the Baldur's Gate games that went to the early consoles that, sorry, hardcore console fans, were nothing more than ports of the PC versions, even if they called them something different. So I guess in a very arrogant way, it's completed my BioWare journey as far as I'm concerned. If you somehow missed this game like I have, and you've played things like Knights of the Old Republic, or you played things like the later Baldur's Gates, or Mass Effect, or even, God help you, Dragon Age, you'll notice a lot of similarities, especially with Knights of the Old Republic, the Star Wars single-player RPG. And I think that BioWare took a lot of what they learned from their very early experiences, including the couple of Knights of the Old Republics, and rolled it all into Jade Empire. And I'm really enjoying it. I couldn't pass it up. Again, on Google Plus, I saw it was run, like $3.74 on a sale all day on Good Old Games, and I went, yeah. I'm hoping to get it finished before we do next week's show, partly because I don't want it really going into the pile of shame, and partly because I'm really, really enjoying it. We'll see how much EverQuest eats into my time. I think we'll determine that. And the final game I played, and one that I think I saw this on my Your Friends Have Been Playing thing on Steam, but I'm not 100% sure. It's called Game Dev Tycoon. Now, if that sounds suspiciously familiar, that would be because it's like another game that I talked about on the show that's for mobile, called Game Dev Story by Carosoft. It's pretty much Game Dev Story made for the PC. Now, I apologize. I did not look to see if Game Dev Story had ever been ported to PC. I've got it on both my iOS device and my Android device. So that's part of the reason I really didn't have an issue with giving money to a cool, maybe, sort of, kind of, we're going to get into this a little bit later, knockoff. Because I have already given Carosoft my money a couple different times. It's fun. It's a great time killer, or it's a great busy game. It plays in a windowed screen, so I could be reading email or checking forums or checking website news while playing it. And if you've played Game Dev Story, it's just like Game Dev Story. Just set up for PC. You know, your office space is a little different. The animations are a little different. They're a little more clear because obviously you're not on a small screen or smallish screen. But it's fun, and you know, I didn't end up paying more than a few dollars for it, but I still have this twinge of, should I be buying this when it's really almost a dead duplicate of another game by another company? Only it's indie and green light. So, you know. But that's all I've been playing. Now we're gonna get into that whole thing here in a sec, John. But let's get into your Wii Sports stuff first. Now, a couple weeks ago, and you can stop me and correct me anywhere I'm wrong as I do this spiel. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about this, and our very own Pat Mann has been very much dead set against this, that it's overpriced, along with
Zelda, that it's overpriced. They should have done it more like, you know, some of the Halo anniversaries and some of that stuff. And yet, you kind of had hinted what I think has come to pass now, that at this $10 per sport price, maybe Nintendo had a well-baited hook and was going to make far more money with it than most people were assuming, you know, because when you look at it as a whole package, as just Wii Sports, Wii U, or whatever you want to call it, repackaged and sent out, then maybe it is a little iffy, considering it came free, air quotes, on the Wii.
Yep.
So where do you stand now after having played a rousing round of multiplayer bowling?
Especially when I did so well, I was getting spares and strikes all over the place until I choked in the 10th frame. But it was... I am interested to play more online multiplayer, yes. Do I think $10 per sport is excessive? Considering if you get all the sports, which would be tennis, bowling, baseball, boxing... and golf, we're talking $50 all over again if you get them all. Now, the pricing scheme that I think that's excessive. I wouldn't want to pay another $50 just for Wii Sports, but with online multiplayer. As much fun as it is, granted, it is fun, and I could feel myself being drawn into playing it. But whether I want to pay that much money, I don't know. But one thing that is smart is dividing it up into the chunks. You know what I mean? I think it is smart that if I don't want boxing, which I never played and I thought it was terrible, I don't have to pay that $10. So, you know, then it's $40. Still too much money. The first two that have come out are tennis and bowling, and those are the two that are probably the most popular. Maybe golf is in there too. Baseball I didn't care for very much either, but you know, if it's the three things that I pay the only ones that I pay for and they're $10 each, well, you know, it's getting a little better. You know what I mean? Even though I don't get the other ones, they are the only three that I would play anyway. It's getting a little better. But then the other pricing scheme that they have, the $2 for a day. $2 gets you 24 hours of play. So if I'm only playing it very sporadically, and I'm playing it like when I have friends over and want to do a multiplayer fun, $2 for access for the day, and that's all I spend for the next, you know, 3-4 months until they come over again. $2 isn't so bad. Maybe like it's almost like a rental, right? It's like renting the game. You know, I'm having played it and like as you say, I could feel the hooks a little bit getting in there. It's a smart way to play it, for Nintendo to do it, to make some cash if people buy into it. I will say that much. Does that answer your question in a roundabout way? I don't know.
Oh, I'm not even sure there was a question. It was more of an update. See, this to me proves what I'm fairly certain I thought when we talked about this originally. From my perspective, and I own a Wii, and I got Wii Sports with it for free. Ha ha. This still works. Yes, it was on Wii, but at $10 a game, like if, you know, even if you want three, like I could see myself having bowling, tennis, and the baseball, because I do like the baseball. Mm-hmm. $30 will be. Even if you're just playing it couch co-op.
Yep.
But that fact
does remain. Like, I have Wii Sports. They're in my little, you know, tickle trunk of games there. I mean, that disc is there. I can put that into my Wii U and play it on my Wii U. Like, I don't, you know, and play it as is with the same Wii remotes, you know, like.
Right. And to me, that's fine. That's my whole point. The people that are calling this a cash grab, then don't buy it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm coming from with this.
Like, you got it.
It's there to be had, but it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. So what the hell does it matter? They put it out there again and gave you multiplayer. And yep. gave you multiple options. I'm still at the same place I was with this last time. I guess in the right mindset, it's a cash grab. But like you said, like it's a cash grab and you own a Wii, hook up your Wii and play it on the goddamn Wii.
Don't even hook up your Wii. Just put the disc in your Wii U.
That too.
That's all you need to do. Like you have a Wii mode right there on the Wii U itself. Like you can go right for it, right to town.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still at the same place I was last time. I guess in a way it's a cash grab, but if no, I struggle with the term cash grab because nobody's holding a gun to your head. Like there's rumors running around right now that part of the single player campaign may or may not be, and I haven't heard a shit ton of screeching, so I'm thinking this rumor is toast. It's not true. But there was a rumor floating around that part of the Assassin's Creed Black Flag, the latest Ass Creed, its single-player campaign was locked away behind a paywall. Like I said, really? It stayed in rumor form. Haven't seen any truth to it. Haven't seen the internet pitchforks and torches. And now, honestly, I attempt to stay away from those sewers. But when it gets to, like, that would have got to Mass Effect proportions, and then you can't escape it. If you pay attention to any social media at all, you can't escape it, escape controversies, no matter how contrived and convoluted, when they get to a certain, you know, certain size or certain inertia behind them. And I haven't seen that. That, to me, is a cash grab. But, again, it's semantics, and I do, as much as I slaughter the language and create my own on a daily basis, see the Stanley game, for example, we use these terms, painting with a broad brush, trying to display our anger, because apparently the written word, if it's over 500 letters or you're not using all sorts of buzz terms, you know, so maybe that's my issue with it, the constant abuse and misuse of words. You know, like modding and hacking now being seen as one and the same. No. Just no. You know, but at the same time, let's see sales numbers, I think, with the Wii U sports stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It still doesn't predict success or failure, though, because I really don't think it costs Nintendo that much to put it out there.
No. And honestly, I don't think it's going to be a system seller. It's download only from the eShop. Like, it's catering to people who already have a Wii U. Like, I'm not going to go out and buy that just to play it unless they start packing it in as a download code or something like that. But
well, they pretty much just hinted as much in stories I saw. Yeah. You know, I mean, Nintendo's attitude was kind of, here it is. If you want it, great. If not, fuck off.
Yeah.
Or whatever fuck off translates to in Japanese. So, I mean, I don't know. It's really, it's there. Mm. If you don't like it, don't buy it.
Yeah. Let me ask you this now. This is sort of an aside and something kind of silly.
Sure.
What does it say about perhaps me, or perhaps, you know, I'm sure there are other people who feel the same way, that, you know, the digital download versions of things being very convenient and having that, it's always on the system, it's always at a touch away, rather than having to change discs. Like for example, on my 3DS, we bought Luigi's Mansion download code direct to the machine, you know, to the SD card. We downloaded, we bought Animal Crossing via download code. I don't have those physical cartridges, you know, to change out and carry around. That was part of my deal, you know, that was my perspective from a portable point of view. You know, I don't want to take 5 cartridges with me wherever I go, having them all on the desktop, so to speak. You know, just pick the icon and go. It was really appealing. What for a home console? I'm surprised how much that appeals to me as well. not having to deal with the disc, not having that case on my shelf, like I can put it away and not have to worry about it. Is that like, does that appeal to you at all? Being able to do that? Does that matter to you?
I don't care what format I get it in. I think what all digital downloads does for me is make it too easy. It's like, I'll put it like this. It's like if you're trying to lose weight and you have either a huge chocolate cake sitting on your stove or a bowl of candy. It's just too damn easy. Mm-hmm. That's where I come at from the digital perspective. Like, literally, if I want a physical copy, I got to get up, get in a vehicle, preferably with pants on. I was told that specifically in GameStop. Must have pants. And go to the store. Or, if you want to do the pantsless version, as long as you're not on Kinect, that joke's never going away, by the way, you get on Amazon. And then you wait for the mailman to cram it in your box, mailbox sideways and hope the disc isn't broken, if you're me. But at the same time, I'm fine with the transition. There are some things when it comes to change that I resist and I dig my heels in. I did it a little bit with phones. We all do. That's what makes us human. I think what it is with digital, and there's going to be holdouts. Our very own Gunsage, I bet, will be one of the hardest of hardcore holdouts. Glace is pretty bad, too. Or not bad, but pretty much, you know, it's kind of like that, too. Digital download is just kind of, I'm just kind of rolling with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that ease and that lack of crap to pack around makes it the transition that much easier once you start to understand how easy it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've noticed that about you. You know, like, you were a little leery, was the sense I got listening when you did the Animal Crossing New mm-hmm. Leaf, and then Luigi's Mansion. You seemed like you were pretty comfortable with the thought, and you're buying a lot of games on Steam. It's here. You know, for those of you that are still clinging to your, you know, DVDs or Blu-rays and going, not for my cold dead hands, well, get ready to die then, I guess, because it's here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine going to a store and buying a PC game on disc, unless it was some ridiculous sale, you know, but I don't even see that happen very often. But like I don't think I'll ever buy anything for my PC other than by download. Can you imagine doing that?
Buying a physical copy on PC?
Yeah. Let's assume now that it's not only available by disc for some reason. You know,
the last one that I did it, and I swear it's 70% of it was nostalgia, was Guild Wars 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure why I did that. And it has made me contemplate never, ever, ever buying a PC game on disc again, or on, you know, on DVD or Blu-ray. Oh, there's no reason to. Like, what was even funnier about Guild Wars, and because I just sped through the receipt email from Amazon so fast, is I ordered it before the launch date or before the early access. I had 3 days of early access and didn't know that for like a day and a quarter. Mm-hmm. And so quite literally, all I did with that DVD of Guild Wars 2 was pull a code out of it to authorize my digital copy that I downloaded from Amazon. That's the only thing that disc has done. It now sits in one of my containers here, these neat little drawer things that I got. I swiped from some other family member that hold all my PS2 and 360 and... Now, that said, here's the interesting thing that I notice a lot of people talking about with the next gen. Even if I get an Xbox One or PS4, which will happen at some point in the first year of its life, I'm guessing, I'm not getting rid of my 360 copies.
No.
I'm going to keep those, and I'm keeping my 360. No matter what they offer on the cloud, no matter what, you know. The physical stuff I do have, I'm going to hang on to. Now, part of that's because I have a pack rat mentality to a certain extent. I could probably build you a 486 out of a cardboard box of parts I've got in the next room.
That's how bad it is with tech stuff, nerd stuff. But from here on in, yeah, I mean, like I said, Guild Wars came out last November, I think, or last October. Did we have Halloween last year? I guess it was September. And before that, I bought Diablo 3 physical.
Yeah.
And truthfully, the reason I did Diablo 3 is I was afraid that Blizzard was going to have a disaster on their hands for downloads the first day. So I decided to get a physical copy because there were so many RPG nerds or action RPG nerds that were just dying for this game. And I was even leery, like when I downloaded on the early access for Guild Wars 2, I'm like, oh, this is going to take forever. I'm just going to start it. I'm going to go to the ranch. I'm going to do some work. I'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with my above average or better, you know, internet connection, it took like an hour.
Yeah.
I think I went to the store. I think I did some errands. The towns came back and was ready to go to be patched. Or no, it didn't need patching, I don't think. But yeah, but I'm completely comfortable, at least on PC, with digital, digital only. And truthfully, now that I've done, I don't know what it is, and I do need to call my internet provider. Xbox Live hasn't been downloading as fast for me. I've not been happy with Xbox Live. I don't know if it's because they're shuffling servers off to prepare for the Xbox One. But the last 5 months, I have not had that good luck with downloading. But when I downloaded Halo 3, it really didn't take all that long when I got to looking at the clock. Mm-hmm. You know, my clock on my PC.
I bring that up about, you know, the convenience of having it on a console desktop, only because like, I'm sitting here looking at my Wii U gamepad is still open, and I have just looking at the icons on it, and you know, thinking to myself, you know, it is all right to have Wii Sports Club just sitting there at the top. I don't like if I'm you know, readily accessible, like, you know, my other virtual console games and stuff, you know, it's all there, you know, at my fingertips. Like if I'm sitting down on the couch, I don't have to, you know, stick around with looking for discs or putting them in and stuff. Like, it's all readily available. It's too bad that the bloody hard drive in the Wii U is so small, but I don't know. I was wondering if just the convenience of that appeals to you, or if that says anything about me in my laziness.
Well, the convenience totally appeals to me. I freely admit to being lazy. Yeah, I'm the kind of person that when I have a project to do or have a job to do or I'm at work, I go 1,000 miles an hour. There's no pacing. And I'm just dead tired at the end of the day. Never known any other way to do it different. But when I'm allowed to be lazy, when I literally have nothing to do in front of me for 6 to 8 hours, mm-hmm. I am minus 1,000 miles an hour. You know, plug in the catheter, mini fridge under the desk, I'm playing video games. And in a way, unfortunately, that's meant to be a joke, but it's probably reality for some people. In a way, that's how my body copes with the way I do things. You know, is when you have those lazy days, and obviously with some of the things going on in my life lately, I've had more lazy or non-active than active. But that's just, it's always seemed to me that's how my body copes. And that's kind of why I like video games as a hobby. I have other hobbies, and I have things that I do outside of video games. But when I'm playing video games, I can just shut my brain off for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I can just sit here and be just the textbook definition of sloth. You know? Yeah. And so, point being in that tangent, oh, hell yeah, digital makes it easier. Mm-hmm. It's just like Jade Empire. If that had been $4 on Amazon, I probably would have passed. I'm probably, and I gotta pay shipping, and I gotta wait for it. $4 on GOG, take my money. You know, and it's downloaded an hour later, and I'm ready, it's ready to play. Or 2 hours later, it's ready to play. Whatever it was. You know, so I mean, I think I by no means have ever bought into the stereotype that all gamers and nerds are lazy. There's a lot of people who aren't, that they have other interests and hobbies. But I think if you give them easier options, they're going to be the first ones to go for it over potentially other personality types or groups or genres or whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. I think we're just to put it selfishly. I just think for both of us, I think we're just coping with the transition better than some.
Yeah.
Which, given our status as quote unquote elder gamers, I'm okay with that. You know, we're going to get into a little bit about shooters here a little later, and I'm realizing that maybe I'm just too damn crotchety to be playing shooters anymore. You know, that's one place where it's making a transition that I'm not happy with, mm-hmm. and I think it's ridiculous. Moving on from John's thing to mine. Now, obviously, you got my hints and this, that, and the other thing about Game Dev Tycoon. Now, this was a Steam Greenlight game. So, you know, indie. And we've always been told that indie is pure. It's the most pure gaming imaginable. Then, again, and I know I brought this up before, somebody please explain to me how a complete clone like Game Dev Tycoon can exist and the 68,000 Minecraft clones and A, still have people calling indie pure and all this. When I look through Steam Greenlight, I see clone after clone after clone, or ripoff after ripoff, if you prefer that terminology. And yet, if this was EA doing it to Activision or vice versa, or Ubisoft, the knives would be out. First off, explain that to me. Or what are your thoughts on that whole thing? Is that just because it's indie and open source and so free and people's attitudes are different? Is that why we're seeing these? And people are just lazy and want to cash in?
Yeah. I mean,
what's your thinking on all that?
Yeah, so the clones that we see in indie games, I mean, it's, you know, it's like the regular video game business. Like, it's all about, you know, there's this perception that it's all original ideas and stuff, but there are people out to make money, and it's, you know, there's the diamonds in the rough, but there's a lot of people who just want to get their stuff out there and make that cash. Well, Minecraft did it well, I'm going to do it well. And so, and or at least if I don't do it as well, at least I'll make a couple of bucks. It's a matter of it's independent, doesn't matter if it's the big time, people are out there to make money. And they're going to make, I mean, look at the iPhone store, you know, the iTunes store. Like, there's so much crap out there, and these are just, you know, quote unquote indie developers trying to make a buck as well, right? But then you do find some great stuff, and it sets home a good message that independent gaming is great, and you know, and it can be, but you can't be blind to the fact that other people are, you know, just trying to make a quick buck.
I think that's what I really want to get out there, and why we're bringing this up again is because we should never turn a blind eye to any form of gaming. Mm-hmm. You know, and the indie crowd gets so much love because they're indie. It makes me a cynic and a jackass, but my radar instantly goes up when I start hearing all this very hipster talk about indie and free and so pure and la 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 la. Nothing's pure. If it's created by man.
If it makes money, it's not pure.
No. No. There's nothing pure about trying to make money. I guess unless you're a Buddhist monk on salary. Then maybe. Do they get paid? That's a good question. I should probably know that. But anyway, my other question, too, and the moral quandary I had about it mm-hmm. was, if you saw one of those clones and you knew about the original and you'd bought none of them, would you be more tempted to pay more for the original or be able to justify paying for a clone because it's less money or something to that effect?
I really personally don't have a lot of patience for clones. In terms of, you know, I can't imagine buying, Dirtcraft over Minecraft just because it might be a couple bucks cheaper. Like, you know, the thing that started it all, it, you know, Even if the clones had some sort of improvements over the original, I think I'd probably go back to the original. Just because. It's kind of hard to say. Like, it's not because it came first, but like there's the original idea. There's the original spark. You know. It does mean a little bit of a something there to be the originator. You know, but. You know, clones often aren't improvements. Clones are often just, you know, the bare bones of what it's trying to emulate and get you to try. I'm just trying to think of a good example.
Well, the thing is in a lot of these little indie games, there are differences, or it does a really good job mimicking the original. That Game Dev Tycoon does a really good job mimicking the original.
Mm-hmm.
Miner Z, which I bought, took the concept of Minecraft and then added some different aspects to it, which is why I only paid the like $1 it was on Xbox Live.
Mm-hmm.
I would tend to go for the original, not because I think maybe it's better, but because I think it's a good idea to put your cash where credit is due.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes back to gamers ourselves being able to recognize that there's, you know, no matter what level of gaming, from indie to the big corporates, there's going to be some snakes in the grass. You know, and I struggle with that all the time. I mean, like I said, if I had not bought Game Dev Story in two or three places, or at least two, I probably would have passed on this one from Steam. And that's not some moral justification to make it okay. I don't give a shit if it's okay or not. You know, I bought it because I want to buy it. But I felt more confident in my decision internally and for myself personally because I had Game Dev Story on several devices already.
I'll give an example of a game that I will call a clone, even though it could be better, even though it could be more interesting. But that new Sonic Racing game, the recent one that Pat was playing on his Wii U, the one that came out around launch of the Wii U.
You mean the one that was already on the first version of it was already on 360?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and
this is a complete sequel. I know where you're going with this, and we're gonna. Well, agree to disagree as we always do, but no, there was the original Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing was on 360 about
Transformers. Yeah, yeah.
Two, three years ago that we
played. You guys were playing it. Yeah, that's true. That's the one.
And then Pat bought the sequel on the Wii U because he wanted to try it on the Wii U. And I bought the original way late in the game, and him and I just played some co-op games. Actually, we had like 2 weeks of fun with it, so can't complain.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, and for my part, I didn't buy it because I was in my mind, well, Mario Kart is Mario Kart. I don't want to play a kart racer clone if Mario Kart is doing it, you know, the way I want it done. So why would I buy it? That's stretching it a bit, maybe. But
to me, having played both, I obviously haven't played the. I mean, Mario Kart's almost a clone of itself anymore. I'm running into the issues here of games that have been around like 27 million years for one with Mario Kart, and for two, and this is somebody who's played both. You know, it's not me going, oh, I'm going to defend Sega because I like Sega better. No, I played both, played millions of versions of Mario Kart. That's where you run into the issue of same genre.
Yeah, maybe I'm mixing up my games in the same genre rather than clones.
Yeah, because I mean it's like, you know, like we were talking about earlier in what we've been playing, calling Burnout Paradise a clone of Need for Speed. It's got four wheels and you're racing and crashing happens.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm sure. In fact, I have no doubt that the folks at Sega borrowed some concepts from, you know, Mario Kart. But that kind of rolls into a whole new thing. It's something you do have to pay attention to in indie as well. of okay, you've developed or designed or implemented a new mechanic that sets a new standard. Then you're kind of floating more into a gray area if somebody takes that mechanic you've made, makes it their own, or copies it as best they can, and adds it to a completely different game. You know, I mean, it's the same in shooters, it's the same in fighters, it's the same in racing games. You know, I think for the Sonic and Mario Kart example to be more correct, there would have had to been some plumber dude with a Sega kind of esque fit to him, rather than them all being Sega characters in their own little Sega carts themed to those characters. Yeah. You know, like Sonic and Dark Sonic, not Dark Sonic, Dark something. The only one I would consider a clone in Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, and it's one Pat and I hate with a passion both, is the dude that throws bananas. There is some monkey guy in there that's a little bit like Donkey Kong. But it has lineage in the Sega universe.
Yeah.
You bring up an excellent point of it's probably hard for the typical gamer to determine what the hell is going on sometimes. You know, I mean, now the Game Dev Story versus Game Dev Tycoon, if you played them both, you go, okay, yeah. It's like, you know, and there's some knockoffs on Xbox Live. I swear that's why Mojang decided to let another studio port their game to Xbox Live. There's some knockoffs on Xbox Live that are almost dead ringers for Minecraft. You know, at least Castle Miner Z took the concept and kind of made it their own, changed the art, changed how you build things a little bit. You know, it's still a clone in my mind, but I'm sure you could develop a litmus test for it, but it would just be the most ridiculous time-wasting event ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an easy issue, and that's where I kind of have problems with it, struggle with it. I mean, I enjoyed Game Dev Tycoon, not so much because of the game itself, but because it allowed me to play it on my PC while I'm doing other things, which is a little more difficult when you're doing it on a tablet and a phone.
Yeah.
If you have a two monitor setup like I do, you know, I mean, I can just switch from one to the other, one to the other, one to the other. You know, but it's interesting though. And like I said, I think the thing the audience should walk away from is be very careful in your use of clone. Haha. You're like, that's going to happen. And you know, never forget that, as we said, anything that's got money involved is not exactly going to be the most cleanest endeavor you've ever seen. Some are cleaner than others. Obviously, I wouldn't put Game Dev Tycoon's creators, who are a pair of brothers, if I recall correctly, in the same camp as Activision, Ubisoft, and EA. or Microsoft, Nintendo, as far as money grubbing suckers. So there you have it. It's one of those discussions you can have 100 times and come up with something to do. And yeah, it was a great example. I totally give you that was a perfect example, because they are two kart racers, and it is two companies that competed pretty much head to head, beating each other in the head for a number of years. You know, mm-hmm. And if there were a few more things in that game, where it would have tipped. Why it's close to me, where it would have tipped, if there were a few more things in there that mimicked Mario Kart, or were at least taking cheap shots at Nintendo, then maybe. You know, but outside of the fact that they're both kart racers, one is definitely tied to the Nintendo universe, and the other is definitely tied to the Sega universe. You know, because you race on maps and things that are all from old Sega games, some of which even I couldn't figure out what the hell they were from in a couple cases. Let's move on. We're going to discuss COD, but not in a manner that the audience is going to start groaning and moaning much, or not in a manner we've done 1,000 times. This just kind of happened to be happenstance. Right now, on Metacritic, the Call of Duty for 360 is sitting at 74, and the one for PS4, which isn't even out yet, is sitting at 78. Bravo, Metacritic, for trying to suck Activision's ass for putting multiple copies of the same fucking game on there. Now, what I did with this is I took out the obvious 100% plants, as I see it, you know, like official Xbox magazine. And it comes, it rounds down to roughly about a 6.8 or close to 7 for the Call of Duty for the 360, and roughly a little higher than a 7, like a 7.2 for the PS4. Surprising to me, first off. I did not think that there would be enough climb on board if the game did not do that well. And it wasn't the scores that surprised me so much. It was the text that I was reading, especially from sites that are prone to letting their marketing department be the editorial department, like IGN, Kotaku, and others. I don't even know if Kotaku bothers to review games anymore. This one just, it kind of ran out of steam. They did not like the single player too much, and the multiplayer was, as our very own, I don't know if he's our own, but he's our friend, Chris Lloyd said, you know, pretty much the same old stuff. Which, before anybody can even start to grumble, this is not a knock against COD. I don't care. There's a larger point to be made here. The game still sold, supposedly, according to Activision, $1 billion on launch day. So obviously, as some wing nuts were putting it to you know, fill page views, it's review proof. Okay, it may be review proof, and it may not matter that it's not getting 9s and 10s across the board like Black Ops 2 did. What may matter is what comes next.
Yeah.
There's two big guns hoving into view come next year. One is Bungie, remember them, with their game Destiny. The other is Respawn Entertainment, dudes formerly known as Infinity Ward. with their game Titanfall. Is this, John, enough of a crack in the armor of Call of Duty that Respawn and Destiny, or not Respawn, but Titanfall and Destiny have a chance to maybe claim the top spot in shooter gaming?
There's definitely a small crack. I think Call of Duty, you know, for some people has suffered from fatigue. You know, I mean, it's hard to deny it when there's a game every year, and you know, a lot of them are very much the same. And here we are, we're seeing this game, and with these kinds of scores, if they can come in with a game that just, you know, changes the game, so to speak, there's a chance. You know, I mean, it's really too bad that Titanfall, I think it was Titanfall, was the closest to possibly being a launch title, if I'm right.
Right.
It's too bad that it's not. If assuming that the quality of that game is as high as people anticipate, because that could be a system seller, if it is. I don't know if people are going to upgrade their PS3s to 4s and such just to get the best, you know, the best looking Call of Duty version that they can get. But maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they will. But if they're gonna make a dent, I think you're right. I think the time is now.
Well, I'm gonna take the opposite view, and not just for podcast purposes. I think this delay was from both of them. Although I still don't even know what Destiny is, and I've been reading up on it. Goddamn Bungie. It looks like a cross between Star Wars Battlefront and Halo.
Mm-hmm.
But I, as much as I'm not still a huge diehard fanboy of Halo, I trust Bungie. The funniest thing about this is I'm probably not going to play either of them.
Of which?
Titanfall or Destiny. Titanfall has no single player. I'm done. I'm out. And Destiny, I still don't know what the fuck it is.
Mm.
I think these delays were, I think Respawn's delay was purposeful.
And I think it was a good idea. It looks like an even better idea now. Because I'm seeing people who are walking away for similar reasons that I did. It just wasn't appealing enough anymore. And I think that's an important thing to point out. Our basis for this discussion is not the thrash on COD. I don't care if it exists. I don't care if it sells bazillions. I don't care if there's guys pouring hour after hour into the night. Good on them on all fronts. Activision could use the money, God knows. But, well, they just bought themselves back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They could use a billion or two. But at the same time, this had to happen. I've been saying this probably the entirety of we've been doing this podcast, even when I was still playing it. There's a life cycle. I didn't think this was going to be it. When I got up the day it launched, I expected to see 9s and 10s. And I went first to the two or three reviewers I trust explicitly, and one of them gave it a 5, the other two 6 and 7. And I went, okay. What's, you know, well, and, you know, because you got to take sales numbers out of it because it's become cultural. It's just like Halo. I'm pretty sure Halo or COD could get 3s and 4s and people would still play as long as they didn't have game-breaking bugs. And I'm talking game-breaking bugs within the game. You're always going to have cheaters and bullshit like that, which is a decent portion of the reason why I want nothing more to do with them in a lot of cases. But if I was going to give one of them the chance of maybe reclaiming the top spot, it's not going to be Battlefield. For those of you that are Battlefield fans, and that includes myself for the most part, it's not going to be Battlefield. Okay, DICE and EA have no fucking clue what they're doing. It's just become obvious. Now, I hate saying that. It drives me nuts that I have to say it, but it's my honest opinion about it, and I refuse not to say it. It's either going to be Titanfall or Destiny. Titanfall, I don't think so. And this train of thought comes from our very own Pat Mann. Titanfall is an Xbox exclusive. Kind of hard to take over the world when you're only on one set of systems. I'm checking now to see if it's PC. Titanfall, I think I think Respawn wants to test the waters. Because, yeah, okay, it will be on PC. PC, 360, and Xbox One. I think they want to test the waters to see if what they've done, what they've come up with, is going to work extremely well. You know? Because never forget, the original COD, when they left the makers of Medal of Honor, the guys that formed Infinity Ward, the original COD, the World War II shooter, came out on PC only. The second one, which was kind of crap, was the first one on console.
Mm-hmm.
So the guys behind Respawn, especially it's West and Zampella, and I can't remember which one's given up the ghost and retired, but those guys kind of know what's going on. Or, you know, they have certain ways they like to do things. I could see them in the long run becoming king again, doing it for a third time. I mean, that will be the amazing thing. To go on a slight tangent, if whatever Titanfall becomes from here, if Respawn can recapture the top spot, that will be 3 in a row. With 3 franchises. Yeah. With a lot of the same people. I'm not 100% sure how many at Respawn are from the original, you know, 2015 that was making Medal of Honor, and then Infinity Ward, and then Respawn. But that would be Medal of Honor, Call of Duty, and Titanfall. It's like, they got the touch.
They got the power.
Yeah, exactly. but I think there's a gap here. I think Infinity Ward and Treyarch have a time frame to make COD better, to reinvent it, to combat the other two. Because I'm not 100% convinced that either Destiny or Titanfall will be awesome first out of the gate. I think you're looking at the sequel, which I'm sure they'll both sell enough to get.
Mm-hmm. They'll definitely sell enough.
So that to me, I mean, it's interesting to finally see COD stumble a little bit, and as somebody who's made quite a bit of fun of COD in various points, it's surprising. But I don't know. If I was gonna pick one, I'm actually gonna go with Bungie. Just because of what Pat pointed out to me of the multi-platform thing. But my gut tells me that probably won't be until game two of either franchise that we'll really see it. And DICE, you might as well just give up Battlefield now because I think you're fucked. And it pains me to say that because for years, Battlefield had the best multiplayer of them all. I mean, if you go and look at what Call of Duty Ghosts is, they've stolen an ass ton of stuff from Battlefield's multiplayer, and rightfully so. Again, I'm saying stolen to be a sarcastic jerk, but truthfully, there's a lot of concepts and mechanics there that, like squads and other things, that fits into any first-person shooter really well, and it's what made Battlefield, And it's hard for me to talk about it because I just don't realistically see myself playing these because they're giving into what I see as the vocal minority. Or less than 100% of the audience and going multiplayer only. I'm not paying $60 for a multiplayer only game that doesn't have some kind of solo experience. I want to pay $60 for a game that's a quote unquote multiplayer only. I'll play MMOs. I'll keep slashing dudes with swords and fists and things and have a nice day. And in most cases, I'm not going to have to pay $60 for those.
Yeah.
So, okay, so just for the fun of it, who do you give the better shot to of taking the crown? Doesn't matter time frame, just COD with the resurgence, Respawn with Titanfall, or Bungie with Destiny?
I think Bungie probably has the edge because it's on multi-platform. In terms of mass, saturation. Now, then again, Titanfall is it's exclusive, but of course, Halo was as well, and Halo was one of the not to say that this is necessarily the next Halo, but Halo was able to reach mass appeal and what's the word I'm looking for? Halo is almost a household name in terms of video games. You know what I mean?
Well, to go into another tangent though, have you ever noticed that that Halo and COD don't ever get compared? And I think, and maybe you have a counter argument to this or another thought, I think it has more to do with the fact that Halo's space opera and COD's modern shooter.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Halo's an exclusive to one system. But I
True.
bet if you started comparing lifetime numbers, Halo's not as far behind COD as some people would like to think, or would think in general.
Yeah, all the Halo's huge, right?
Well, to me, Halo and COD, and again, it pains me personally to say this because I love Battlefield. Halo and COD went to cultural phenomenon level. And that once that happens. They are review proof to a certain extent once that happens.
Like if I hear anybody talking about online multiplayer, like just the casual Joe Blow six pack who plays something that's a shooter, it's either COD or Halo. Like how rarely I hear people talk about Battlefield is, I just don't hear people talking about it, right? Maybe they'll play it for a while and stuff. You listen to podcasts and people and you hear it on there, people talking about it, but like people that at least in my neck of the woods, I don't hear anybody talk about Battlefield.
Right, and I mean, it was that way for a lot of years, and in some ways it was great because it kept the COD clones out of fucking Battlefield. Well, because they are, I mean, Battlefield was never a tactical shooter like Rainbow Six, but it was far less Twitch, especially on PC. It was far less run and gun Twitch than Halo and COD. And that's to me where DICE let EA talk them into blowing it the most. They made it to Twitch.
in the last few iterations, and that's not what it's been about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been more about tactics, not tactical. It's a little different, but tactics and using angles and things to complete your objectives and not just playing a regular. I bet, you know, in COD, I'm sure I played probably over 50% deathmatch. In Battlefield, it was probably more like in the teens and 20s. Probably about 60% capture the flag or the waypoint thing that it became later on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because those are far more skilled, you know, there's far more wide skill sets you can use in those than just, oh, I've shot Johnny 5570 for the 80th time. Look at me. I'm pro. You know, goes back to like those PC gamers crowing about being able to play against console guys. Yeah, I've played with really, 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 really good shooter players. Yeah, there ain't too many of them. And most of them are competing professionally. And if you actually run across one in a PC server or Xbox Live or PSN, just forget about it. You ain't going to win. I will scrap the resolution story. I don't feel like doing it. Although that was that. Actually, let's talk about one thing. We were going to do a resolution story on how the Xbox One's not really 720, but it kind of is, and how the PS4's was kind of 1080, and it's really not. And some use scalers, and people are idiots, and this, that, and the other thing. Blah 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 blah. But one thing that came out in this article from Games Radar was talking to technical folks, and they were talking about how far you sit away from your screen and how big your screen is. That aspect, John, I found really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, it definitely made a lot of sense. Did that actually kind of have some, it seemed like that had some revelations for you as well.
Well, I mean, I know that for me, I mean, when I played Skyward Sword on Wii, like, it's a pretty game, but if I sat back on my couch across the room, like, it looked really nice. It looked really, I mean, it wasn't that, even that bad up close, really. But, like, Wii games max out at 480p, and if you sit, you know, 5 feet from your television, my 40-inch television, it looks jaggy as shit in some games. But if you sit back, where, you know, and if you look at that graph and you sit back the appropriate distance, still looks pretty decent. You know, it's not HD, I guess, but it's still pretty decent, right? You know, it's about perspective.
Well, and perspective is one thing, but to get into what they were talking about a little bit, basically, for those of you that don't know or as confused as an average gamer can be and willing to admit it, the PS4 runs at native 1080. That means it comes out of the box at 1080 and goes into your TV at 1080. Whereas the Xbox One comes in at 720, goes into a scaler, and comes out at 1080p. The bottom line is they're both going to hit the screen at 1080. So if you're a rational thinking consumer, don't use that as your you probably don't want to use that as one of your reasons for purchasing one over the other. You know,
mm-hmm.
Scalers are not something to be afraid of, folks. They're just a device used to help things along. But here's the thing. This is what John's talking about and what it talks about in this article. Through an informal poll done a few years ago at Gawker, shows and other things, Gawker being that tech website, the average distance people sit from an HD TV is 6 to 10 feet. And so that plays a part. And I think also TV size plays a part. Because remember, Glaze was talking about that he plays on a really small screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did some testing with that, playing on these 24-inch screens, one of which is slightly newer than the other and supposed to put out more native 1080p. And the other one's like maybe 720 or scales up to 1080 via the monitor. And then taking that out and putting it on the big 44-inch Sony that I've got. And you could tell some differences if you were sitting close, but
I sit closer at my PC monitors than I do at my big TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. I guess initially, if you're concerned at all about it and looking for information, don't panic. You're most like, if you like Xbox One and that's the only thing holding you back from it, then you're probably okay buying an Xbox One.
Yeah, your eyes are not going to detect the difference.
Well, and I mean, quite honestly, this is just fanboy fodder.
Mm-hmm.
For fanboys in the basement of Reddit and NeoGAF and other things to beat each other over the head with. Because truthfully, the dirty little secret here is the true graphic whores, the true wanted at 60 frames a second or better, every minute, every pixel. You know what they play on, John? I'll let you guess. What do you think they play on?
High-end PC.
Thank you. Because that's just it. I mean, with the architecture change, the Xbox One and the PS4 are getting closer, but they're still not going to touch an Alienware gaming PC or a hand-built PC of those same specs. Sorry.
Yep.
That's not fanboyism. That's just reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe, hopefully, we've done our part to massage any fears that folks have about is there really going to be that big a graphical difference? And I just, you read this article. I can't, even with the scaler involved, like I said again, that the fanboys are using to beat each other to death with, I can't work out where, if they're both going in at 1080, it's going to be that big a deal if you sit at a normal distance away from your couch.
Yeah. I mean, in my rec room here, there's basically three places I can sit. My desk is really close to my TV. I would say I'm about 5 feet away. I have my recliner probably 8 feet away, or 9 feet away, and then my couch, which is probably double that again, right? And depending on what I'm playing, I will sit at a particular place that gives me the best view, and If I'm playing a high def game, I can sit here at my desk and play it and be totally satisfied at 1080p, you know. But if I'm playing that Wii, I can sit all the way on the couch, and I won't say that I don't see any difference, but those jaggies and the resolution doesn't matter that much.
No, and like I said, we covered it a little bit. You know, if you're having a hard time deciding, the other thing you can do is just kind of search around, and once you wade through the fanboy crap, you can find out exactly what the scalers do and a scaler does and this, that, and the other thing. And
mm-hmm.
The bottom line is, right now, it looks like to me, as somebody who's a potential console consumer, it's going to come down to, again, like it did with the Xbox, you know, with the last generation, where are my friends going to be for the most part?
Yeah. Where are the friends, and where are the and are the exclusives enough to sway you? Because, you know, you're going to have the games that are the same on both systems, but you know, do you want to play God of War, or do you want to play Halo? You know.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that has zero impact for me, but I will say that it has very little, because I still have in my plan of attack, if I can get it all done, to buy a PS3 and play all the exclusives from the last generation that I can get my hands on. So, and may do the same again. So, you know, that has some impact. Considering I know for a fact Pat's getting Titanfall and will probably make time to play it. Daddy duties and all. I probably would lean towards the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now you can buy a Kinect blocker. It's like putting a sheet over a budgie. It's this little thing that you can slide over the Kinect so the NSA can't look at you in your undershorts. So,
And the saddest thing is if I really went out in my shop and whipped one up really quick, I probably could have made a lot of money because they don't look that hard to manufacture. Tinfoil helmets extra, though. So if you'd like to get in touch with us, we have a number of different ways you can do that. And I'm also going to give a little preview shout-out. If you like comic books or anything to do with comic books, you probably want to tune in next week, if for no other reason than to either agree or rage with some of us. I can promise you without any doubt, we're going to have a discussion next week that we're holding off on this week. That's probably, if nothing else, going to be rather funny. But if you'd like to get in touch with us, we have a number of ways you can do that. First is our Facebook. That's WonderPod Online. All one word, WonderPod Online. Send us a friend request and let us share an obvious bot. We'll get you signed up and you can become one of the silent army. They're dangerous. We have a website. It's WonderPodOnline.com, WonderPodOnline.com. There, I post this podcast partially for archival purposes and also because, in addition to the MP3 downloads that I'll tell you about in a minute, we post an embedded player. That way, you can listen to the show without having to download any MP3s. But if you want to download MP3s, we're on iTunes. Just search WonderPod or look through the store in the gaming section, iTunes store in the gaming section. We're there. If you don't like iTunes, we are at archive.org. Just search for WonderPod in the episode or WonderPod and you'll figure it out. I have no doubts. We have forums, which are something like wonderpodonline.com/WPO forums, or you can just go to our website and look on the link bar on the right-hand side. Join, comment, post, join the spammers. It always happens when you have small forums. Thank God for the banhammer. Banhammer, delete all, double duty with a single click of a button. I love it. We have YouTube channels. We have the 36 Wii YouTube channel, the WonderPod Online YouTube channel, the Chris Lloyd Fantasy YouTube channel, Glazenator's got a YouTube channel. They are not much on them now, but there's lots of stuff you can go through. And if you really want to dig back in the WonderPod archives, I know for a fact on the 36 Wii YouTube channel, there's some very well done but hilarious clip shows. Little clips of this show put to funny pictures. Nothing else worth a look, especially of our older episodes. We have a Twitter. It's at WonderPodOnline.com. At WonderPod Online. It's at WonderPod Online for the Twitter. And we have an email address. It's WonderPod@WonderPodOnline.com. WonderPod@WonderPodOnline.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at O-R-I-G-I-M. Or you can follow John on Twitter.
At John Keo, J-O-N-K-E-H-O-E.
Until episode 184, where it's superheroes or bust, I'm off to start some more Twitter rap battles. See you, people.
Cheers.
And maybe learn to speak the English language. Maybe.